At least talking about magic can make it better, right? Right?
Yeah. We love Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, we love recording podcasts for Magic the Gathering.
The Fortnite of card games.
Yes, it you know, the Smash Brothers, the Fortnite's definitely more of a...
Matt, if it was going to be the Smash Brothers, we need, like, at least 100 Fire Emblem Legends like yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Then I would agree with you. I'm like, yeah, it really is just like Super Smash. So, it's season fucking 3.
Uncommon Commander Podcast, where myself and other guests come on to talk about uncommon legendary creatures that have been printed in Magic's history. I don't know, that was a new way to try to do the intro. Hey, Mr. Fitzy Fitz is back.
Hello.
trust me.
How's it going, man?
It hasn't been that long since the last time you came on, but it sure does feel like it. It's only been like...
Yeah, we talked about like Polymorphic. That was like a couple months ago now.
Yeah, give or take. So, you know, whenever you come on, it's always a good time. I could probably have you on every other week if we really felt like it. It's always a good time.
Could really organize me that much.
You know, you and Prophet are busy doing your own podcast nowadays.
Yeah, it has to be edited. We've got a couple in the pipeline now.
Heck yeah.
Our awesome interview with Quinn we did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Empress Quinn. Gotta love having our Fae Empress on whenever we get the chance. Faeron, what will be last week's episode from this recording. And it's always a great chat with Quinn. But yeah, good to hear. Casual Sevens will finally be having another episode this fiscal year. At some point.
Trying to get Prophet to release as many as the Dies Removal podcast that the Professor and Pleasant Kenobi do. As long as we make as many of they as they do a year, we're doing okay.
The bar is apparently low, but I believe you guys can do it no problem. Yeah. Today we're going to be kind of doing a bit of a repeat, because I have talked about Armix Filigree Thrasher on here before with previous guest Light, but you went the extra step further, because you're like, you know, this Necron commander deck, this Universes Beyond Warhammer 40k Commander Precon is pretty great. What if I pair Armix with Keskit the Flesh Sculptor and, like, cram both the ideas together? And it pops. It pops off. It's fucking sweet.
I know fuck all about Warhammer before those decks came out, but I was looking at them all and I saw the Necron one. I liked a lot of what I had going on, as much as I'm not usually an Aristocrats player, and I wasn't happy with my mono black deck at the time. So I was like, yeah, I ponied up the fucking $100 and bought the precon and tore it apart and made a new deck. And I actually do love it.
Yeah, so let's go over these creatures once again. Luckily, they're both 3 mana, 2 and a black, so it's pretty easy to go over that. Armix is, whenever Armix attacks, you may discard a card. If you do, target creature defending player controls gets negative X till end of turn, where X is the number of artifacts you control, plus the number of artifact cards in your graveyard. And, well, if we're talking about the Necron deck, there's a lot more than not. And then Keskit is a 1/3 where you can tap it, sacrifice 3 other artifacts into your creatures, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put 2 of them into your hand and the other into your graveyard. So you got the discard and the kill in one hand, and then you got kind of like card advantage and filtering into your graveyard in the other. And
you don't have to use Armex that much. I usually don't. Like, I'll play them to like probably sacrifice them or attack a little bit, but I'm not like every turn hyper focused on discarding a card to use its trigger.
Yeah, because you like keeping cards in your hand for the most part.
Yeah, I do. Makes good brain chemical. So, freezes my lizard brain to accumulate resources.
You know, draw cards and maybe use them, but not discard them arbitrarily. But yeah, so one of the funny things is about Magic, and especially about when it comes to like, what does a color identity do in a vacuum? And more often than not, when we think of artifacts, you more often than not think about red, and then maybe we think about blue. And
I was going to say the other way around for me. I think about blue and then red.
Yeah, like, I think I'm kind of like, I don't know, I guess maybe because I play more red more red artifact shenanigans on my end, but, like, really, at the end of it, like, you think of, like, Emry, Padim, who recently got Urza, definitely Urza, yeah. So there's definitely... it definitely goes more blue than red, but honestly, to me, like, it's a bit of a coin flip. And what I find really funny is that, like, even when we went to Kaladesh a few years ago, green's kind of, like, pie, like, share of, like, the artifice influence was kept to, like, making tokens, like, just creatures, mostly, and that was it. While the other colors, of course, got their stuff. But then even when you look back even further, like, we've had stuff like Disciple of the Vault from years ago.
That black equipment. I can't think of its fucking name now, but...
Black equipment.
The one that equips for 2 black mana.
Cranial plating.
There we go.
Yeah. Like, very obviously, like, black's kind of always dipped in it, but that usually depended on us going to, like, Mirrodin or Phyrexia or whatever.
Artifact-centric places.
Yeah, and then, of course, we go to Kaladesh, and we get stuff like Marionette Master, probably one of the most, like, absolute crack six drops that cares about artifacts coming and going. Absolutely love it. But then, you know, just because they had to appeal to... the themes of Warhammer 40K, they make an absolutely dedicated, heavily permanent-based precon where almost, like, what do we say, like, 70-some-odd percent of the deck is just, or maybe even just a little bit less, like, completely dedicated to artifacts and really, like, pushes what mono-black artifacts can do to, like, a crazy amount, like, an nth degree.
Oh, it added way more gas and just more interesting cards too. Like, I didn't want to build the deck to just be like a powerful combo deck that won with Aristocrats. It's not really my jam. I like to have more knobs to turn and things to do with my deck.
Yeah. Out of the deck that you've put together here, what are the big heavy hitters of the deck that really make this deck sing with your personal flair in it?
I really like Imhotep the Stormlord. He's a Necron card. Whenever one or more artifacts leave your graveyard, create 2/2/2 Necron Warrior artifact creatures. Once you start doing lots of stuff in and out of the graveyard, card's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I've seen this card pop up. I can't remember the exact circumstances the other week. Someone was playing their Imhotep deck and just so happened to be like, all right, I remove the thing in my graveyard and make Necrons, then I do the thing again. And I don't think he even needed Karklan Ironworks. It was just like, just something that he had where it's just surprisingly easy to just vomit out value of 2/2 dudes and be like, all right, and I pass the turn. And everyone's like, oh, fuck. Oh. Kind of nuts.
Yeah, I think he was the best of the Necron Legends, and the only one I play of the, like, face ones.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think here off the top of my head, because I am because obviously I know every single Magic card ever of all time, and I especially know the Warhammer cards, for sure. But you know, that what I find really funny about, especially when it comes to taking bits and pieces of pre-con decks and trying to utilize them in other brews, is that sometimes, like, there's the clash of what the deck wants between, like, sometimes it's like 50% split down the middle. The face card wants to do one thing, and then the other face card wants to do another strategy, and sometimes they don't mesh particularly well. And sometimes it's just better.
That was not the case of the Necron one, though. They all humped for the most part. And like, I probably could have included more Necron legends if I wanted to. It wouldn't be like hurting the deck's construction.
Yeah. But yeah, like, oh god, I'll have to try to pronounce this. Enrakir the Traveler, for example, like, whenever it attacks, you may cast an artifact spell from your hand or graveyard by paying life equal to the mana value rather than paying its mana cost. Like, pretty strong, but you're also, like, probably going to be pretty focused if you do have that in hand, because it's like, you're like, okay, what do you put in the graveyard? Bolas of Citadel, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, basically.
And then Sazerac the Silent King, whenever it attacks, like, you mill three cards, you put an artifact, creature card, or vehicle from uncard mill this way into your hand, and it's like, you know, obviously that is some form of card selection, but you're still having to make a choice of actively milling yourself and not even really putting anything into play. Like, you still only get it to your hand, which is not very, it's not as impactful as just vomiting at, like, spitting out 2/2 warriors, like, anytime you get the chance. It's quite a bit
and
of a big
also
difference.
Artifacts, so then you can manipulate them after they're on the battlefield, and
yeah, like, the synergy is definitely, without a doubt, pretty crazy. And yeah, like, especially when you back it up with having access to Krark Clan Ironworks, you know, Ashdod's Altar for Artifacts is pretty great. It's always good. In fact, you could say it's quite broken. You got probably a handful of ways to loop creatures and your creature artifacts with, like, Workshop Assistant, Scrap Trawler, Mirror Retriever, Junk Diver. I mean,
oh yeah, I got all the homies. We definitely get enough of those on the battlefield, and shit, I will. The deck can combo as well. Like, wasn't, like, my intention for it to just be a combo deck. But you put enough synergistic artifact cards in the deck, and it's going to combo eventually.
Yeah. I mean, like, right away, like, having access to, like, if most of your artifacts are going to be artifact creatures, Pitiless Plunderer being there, Conrad there, starting to deal damage to everyone. Marionette Master is just that magic card that will end the game by itself if you got enough resources in play. And then it's just that over time, Magic has always kind of added bits and pieces to particular strategies. And it's one thing to be like, okay, I'm saying artifacts, but I mean aristocrats. In my head, I'm like mixing the two of them up. But having a deck that is a aristocrats theme, but specific to artifacts, is just something that has been added onto over time, which is really cool. And we get to see that with, like, obviously, we had Disciple of the Vault all the way back in, I think, original Mirrodin block or something.
Yeah, it was in the original Mirrodin.
Yeah, and then you get Agent of the Iron Throne in the not Universes Beyond set of
that's battle. Still Universes Beyond set.
It doesn't have the, but it has the circle symbol, not the triangle symbol.
Yeah, it's still D&D is not part of fucking Magic the Gathering universe.
But it's super weird how they handle that, but maybe we can go on over that in a bit. But yeah, like, getting Agent of the Iron Throne is one of the backgrounds, where it gives your commanders, and especially if you have two commanders in this case, commander creatures you don't have, whenever an artifact or creature you control is put in the graveyard from the battlefield, each opponent loses one life. So it's very easy to just be like, alright, Armix Casket, Agent of the Iron Throne, make a bunch of treasures, or make a bunch of tiny dudes, sacrifice them, and just drain everyone very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I've even thought about using this partner pair prior on 2020, 2021. I was just not happy with my mono black deck, and I was like, oh, and there wasn't quite enough artifact support that I was happy with to want to build it. Mm-hmm. So I did some other goofy shit, like made Una mono black Una deck for a while, And I played Phage for a little bit. And then the Necron deck came out.
It's funny when new sets or supplemental sets or Universes Beyond sets or pieces come out that caters to a particular type of strategy that just has never had enough pieces. Like, the thing that I'm thinking of is, like, when artifacts go to colors outside of like, the normal color pie. So, like, if we get artifact matter stuff in red-blue, we don't blink. Having, let's say, for example, Maria from Dominaria United, for example, that is...
The girl one? That's the one that's kind of Girl Urza?
Yeah, the Scholar of Antiquity in Gruul. Like, that is something that you don't really see, if at all. And the neat thing is that while red already has, like, enough cards in it, but adding green to it kind of adds this other level of kind of busted brokenness. And, you know, I remember when... you know, previews came out and everyone's like, oh, Mary is going to be great. And then I haven't heard anything since, but I just know that is a very powerful strategy and is very unique to, like, red-green. Or not
Jared
unique.
Jared made that deck on my Discord. He had a Myriad deck and it was fucking strong.
Yeah.
I was afraid of it most of the times you played it.
I have described it as like the loudness, scale of a card. Of like, you put it in the command zone, and very obviously people are gonna be shivering and quaking in fear. Like,
that's most new commanders, though.
Yeah, it's definitely a power creep thing that's been happening over time. Like, sometimes you see it in pre-con, sometimes you see it in like the main sets or the special Commander Matters cards that maybe get put into like a set or something. But, you know, you see that one card, you're like, holy smokes, I hope I don't get to see that in command zone. And people, like, 20 people are like, I'm gonna put that in command zone. You're like, oh no.
Yeah, exactly. People gravitate towards powerful magic.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I the other day I was like, you know, I don't like you know, I don't always like sometimes very powerful cards, but sometimes as a treat, I will play them, or powerful effects or whatever. And everyone's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, oh no, I'm being called out. I'm a casual podcaster, you know, I like casual magic, but yeah, sometimes powerful stuff kind of slips through the cracks and get into people's hands. And it's like,
I mean, it's just like, you look at the top, whatever commanders, they're all really powerful cards.
Yeah.
That's just part of playing Commander.
Yep. I mean, the game's got to end at some point, and obviously I'd like to have like 20 copies of Marionette Master, but it is a bit of a hot commodity if you're kind of in treasures / artifacts in some way, shape, or form. But yeah. So obviously, besides draining the life from everyone using the likes of like Marionette Master and Sir Conrad the Grim, what are the other ways that you can win the game with this?
You could win through combat. It's not impossible. It's hard. This deck doesn't do great, but I have like a Wyrmcoil engine. You can make enough tokens with Imoketh, and I have Tormod the Desecrator, which does a similar thing. Except he only makes 1/2/2. You can get enough tokens going to get into the red zone. Also, Citadel can do 10 damage to each opponent.
Which is, you know, the other mode that most people probably don't even look at, because they just see the top half, the top two-thirds. They're like, oh man, I can cast spells for life? That seems great. Wait, there's a third thing it does?
It's not quite an aristocrat. The deck also has Blasting Station. Mm-hmm. So if you create a sacrifice loop, Blasting Station will deal one damage, and that'll be the way to ping the table down.
Yeah. There's not a lot of times that I've seen effects like Bolas's Citadel be busted out. There's been the handful of times that I've seen people be like, alright, I'm gonna sack 10 permanents and everyone loses 10. And it shocks me every time just because of how, like, few times that I've actually seen it happen.
It's very... You just win just from the value of casting free spells.
Yeah.
But...
Once again, busted magic cards. Sometimes they're just really good and you should play them. Um, But yeah, so color identity, I guess maybe that can be the next thing we can go into here, because it's so very interesting how Magic has expanded over the years in terms of what a color can and cannot do. They have like councils of colors in design for like standard stuff. And yet we have been going to planes, and we've been getting all these supplemental sets, and now, especially with Universes Beyond becoming more and more prevalent, we're kind of seeing a very frequent, very heavy bends of what colors can do. And if not outright breaks, you know, we still get the odd, like, Chaos Warp effect, but oh, we can't have it target enchantments just in case, stuff like that. But we still get like a Tybalt's Trickery or something.
Well, Tybalt's Trickery is a little different than a Chaos Warp because they still like guaranteed get something back. I don't know. That's like part of their problem is Chaos Warp can whiff.
Yeah.
They like, there's even some other red cards that blow up enchantments, but they just get another enchantment back.
Yeah.
I can't remember. There was one in the D&D set.
Yeah, Wild Magic Surge does that, where yeah, you get the same thing back. But yeah, we go to an artifact set, so obviously there's going to be a lot of artifacts across the spread of colors. We're going to be going to Eldraine in the next little bit, and there's going to be a lot of spell casting, regardless of what color combination it is.
Looks like enchantments. It seems really enchantment heavy.
Yeah, like, we have the adventures, so there's always, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff with adventures and spells that way. And maybe some things that care about adventures or things coming and going from Exile. But then there's the obvious, like, enchantment.
With all the roles.
Yeah, so as now that previews are coming out and a lot of cool stuff is being shown, a lot of really cool, powerful stuff. Some people are like, oh my god, are they going to break Standard again? And I'm like, I don't know about that. But
who gives a fuck? Standard sucks.
Yeah, we don't like Standard here on this podcast.
Well, it just hasn't been in a good place for a long time, so I just can't imagine there's that much excitement for it. The online chatter I see seems people playing like Modern or Pioneer or Historic on Arena.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't seen many people talk about the Standard metagame.
No.
Other than the same place.
It's the same. Like, it's either been the same, it's been homogenous for an extended period of time, and the whole extension of Standard to have, I believe, 10 sets, like, in rotation for, like, I don't know, what, another year or half a year or however long it's going to be, just seems super weird. And, you know, the one thing that's really interesting, or one thing I find really funny, is that now that, like, the Pro Tour is kind of back, and, like, recently, what was it, Barcelona, I think, wherever the Pro Tour,
that was a Modern Pro Tour, though.
Yeah, it was, exactly, like, it's a Modern Pro Tour, people are, you know, it's a different level of play, but that was the focus. It wasn't Standard, if there was any Standard fans, it wasn't anything I heard about. But, and the reason I bring it up is because the Lord of the Rings set is a Modern legal set, which is really interesting. And it injected a chunk of cards, the One Ring, into circulation, and is causing waves, not only just in, like, obviously not in Standard, but, like, Modern, Legacy, seeing it, and, yeah, even in Commander, like, the One Ring is...
Best new card added to the format in a long time.
Yeah.
I'm putting it, like, literally every deck that isn't a theme deck. It's so fucking broken.
Yeah, you know, getting... One thing is, get, you know, in a one-of 100 card singleton format, like, obviously, if you get the One Ring, you're howling, because if you get it early, you get it in a key moment that you can protect yourself when you cast it, it's great. But obviously, being able to draw 1, 2, 3, 4 cards over time, and, you know, having life loss to match that number, but, you know, it's not, it's obviously, yeah, where it's Commander, we're going down to one
level. I play Necropotence and all kinds of cards that ping you to draw, like, that's not new in Magic.
No.
And the rate over 3 turns is 6 life for 6 cards. That's awesome.
It's really good. And it's just so interesting that, like, you know, obviously Magic's important to a lot of people, us as well. And it's really interesting when these supplemental sets and these things that are now kind of venturing outside of the scope of just Magic's universes, and how these cards get injected into our format, all these other formats, and how it can cause waves just by either being like hyper specifically good, or in this case, just being incredibly generically good. And not even getting into like how good having four copies of the One Ring is in a modern environment, when you can just cast the new one, sacrifice the old one, maybe get some cards out of that old one before it happens, and then you sharp your defenses and you're good to go again. And it's like, holy
shit. Yeah, that seems so powerful.
Not even getting into
it. It's obnoxious as shit to play against fucking 1v1.
Yeah, and it was really funny. I mean, who knows, like, and who knows if there's going to be any bannings, and that's, like, you know, I have no idea because I don't play.
I hope it gets banned in Modern, please. I want it to be fucking affordable.
Yes. I do not want to pay over $50 or $60 for
the ring. Yeah, I haven't even bought one. I'm just spitting them out of my fucking printer. Like, I want to buy them, too. Like, I want to buy one for my two decks that are in Alter Sleeves. That's, like, over $100.
Yeah. Damn. It's just...
If you can even find them in Canada, they've been really hard to find.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing that with all these, on one hand, there is not much artificial scarcity when it comes to very bog standard, probably still considerably powerful, but not format warping or format defining cards. And then we have cards like the One Ring, not even getting into the fact that they had a completely wild goose chase for the one out of one card version of the card, and it gets found within like a month, and then it gets sold to freaking Post Malone for like over $2 million.
The least surprising part of that,
yeah, that all things considering, but like,
if that, who else is gonna buy it?
Yeah, no yeah, like no individual person would be doing that unless it was Posty, but
or like Cassius Marsh,
yeah, you know, and then he was still, you know, he quote-unquote lowballed it for like six figures to start, and everyone's like, nah, those are rookie numbers, man. You gotta go up. And we're like, whoa, all right.
Yeah. I don't blame him.
What? Sorry.
I don't blame him. I didn't think it was going to sell for over $2 million.
Yep. But, you know, when you got that big money to go around with. But, you know, we still got to be able to try to get a regular bog standard one, you know? It's like, holy smokes. Mm-hmm. But, like... And not even getting into how many people's different opinions there are regards of what else is coming out in the near future. Obviously, people who love and adore Magic as it is want the upcoming sets, like the Thunder Junction one, the Western set. Going back to Ixalan is going to be great and super fun. But then you got Final Fantasy interspersed. And let me tell you, you obviously are excited for it. And I'm
so fucking hyped.
I'm excited for it, and it's, you know, despite the fact that some of the Final Fantasies are not quote-unquote fantasy in the generic, like, theme sense, still doesn't change the fact that it is still a fantasy-based, like, fundamentally-based franchise, and, you know, probably a lot of the mechanical stuff is gonna fit in Magic, no problem. But then you get to stuff like Assassin's Creed, where I'm like, I'm not excited about that, but someone's going to be odd pick, but all right, you know?
But it'll probably still make a bunch of money.
Yep.
So it's like, at the end of the day, that's what Wizards of the Coast gives a fuck about. Assassin's Creed's another one. Didn't really resonate with me. I haven't been a huge fan of the games in a while. I liked Odyssey. I can't say. I did like that one. But that's the only one of the last, like, decade I've really enjoyed.
Yeah, and not even getting into, like... I mean, when you think about it, it's like, okay, what are they going to do about the real world, like, allegories of, like, you know...
Oh, not print any cards that have anything to do with the outside universe of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
No one gives a fuck about what anything that goes on outside the Animus. We just want to do cool fucking medieval shit.
Yep, we want to jump off tall towers and yeah, just exactly. go walk through crowds and... shove a blade in a dude's throat and then walk away all casual-like and no big deal.
But I guess there is, like, a precursor alien race in Assassin's Creed, and I bet those characters get cards.
Yeah, probably, maybe. You don't know how that's going to work out, but...
They're, like, futuristic precursor aliens.
Aliens, yeah. You know, they're like, oh, like, we're called... I don't know, they were named...
I can't remember.
Jupiter, or... I can't remember. But yeah, it's just, you know... that is the territory of what it goes into, and it'll be super weird, and people are going to be like, wait, what the fuck? What the fuck do you mean it's more than just assassins and all this other stuff? And I don't know, we'll just have to wait and see. New assassin, like, subtype cards are going to be printed, and some people will probably want that. You know, Ramsey's Overdark.
Yeah, that card will get better.
So, you know, that'll be great, too. You know, it's just niches of Magic and certain strategies and certain color card subtypes or strategies that are very elusive in a particular color combination might come to the forefront. And it'll be really cool to see what happens as these sets get released. But we just got to sit back and wait and not complain a whole lot, you know, or just, you know, don't
complain a lot. Who knows? It's, you know, we're all people on the internet.
You know, we like complaining on X, I mean Twitter, I mean X, or whatever the heck it's called. There was a link, this is a random tangent. I came across a link earlier while I was on Twitter, and it had www.x.com, and I'm like, oh no, and it rerouted to Twitter, and I'm like, so, is this official? Like, is it finally happening? I don't know, but not looking forward to seeing that happen.
Oh, I don't think they changed the website.
It'd be ridiculous.
Probably a lot of back-end shit involved, and would just make it run worse than it already does.
Yeah. So since you're in the hot seat here, Fitz, outside of Final Fantasy coming out, maybe also including Final Fantasy, what are the types of cars that you would like to see from the Final Fantasy set, and I guess maybe any of the other sets that'll be coming out next year?
I don't know. I just want to see the characters.
Yeah.
I have a whole deck themed around Final Fantasy X, where every card's a reference to the game. I would like the Final Fantasy X cards to be good, so when I swap out the real Magic cards that are in the deck, the FF, like, 10 versions are strong.
Maybe one of the Final Fantasy X cards will be 5 colors. Maybe, hopefully.
Hopefully Yuna, yeah. Hopefully would be really nice.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Bahamut, maybe. One of the two of them would be, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. I feel as if, we could joke about all the sets all we want, but, like, especially when it comes to such a big franchise like Final Fantasy, for as long as it has existed, like, people are going to be super hyped to see like Yuna or Tifa and Cloud or Squall or like anyone. I don't know. I'm throwing out names that I would know off the top, or Terra from Final Fantasy VI and like stuff like that. Like there's
Vivi.
Vivi. Yeah. Vivi from nine. Yeah.
Nine.
You know, like who wouldn't want to have a black mage representative as a legendary creature or all this other stuff, you know? So it's super easy to be like, well, I don't get it. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of hype. There's going to be like this, I don't know. It'll be its own weird little like Final Fantasy renaissance on top of all like the re-releases that they've been doing. Final Fantasy 16.
I just played through the Pixel Remaster, which was FF 1-6.
1-6, yeah.
It was sweet.
Yeah, you know, and Final Fantasy 14 still going strong as a community, and it's still getting expansions.
It's bigger than WoW now. It's bigger than World of Warcraft.
And you know what? I'm no MMO player, but they've done apparently like a wicked good job on it, and they just put a lot of heart into it, and people respect it. And then even the new Final Fantasy 16 came out. And apparently there's like a lot of hype behind it. Appropriately, the bits and pieces that I've seen are just sweet.
Yeah, I wish I owned a PS5.
Don't we all? I want my giant PS brick to sit by my TV.
I would like that. Just don't have $700 to spend on one.
Yeah, and it's just that when they were like, I'm pretty sure Gavin Verhey confirmed it, but they will be considering, like, they will be putting in cards all the way from the very first game, like, all the mainline titles. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It was all the mainline games. So, 1-16 and no spinoffs is what I heard.
Yeah, so having, you know, some people are going to be like, oh my god, what do you mean we're going to get Final Fantasy 15 characters? And it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to get the the Japanese boy band on a road trip crew alongside the, you know, Barrett and Tifa
those
and Cloud.
Those characters really grew on me. It was awesome.
I hated
them at first, but I liked that game the more I played it.
It's very easy to get caught up. Like, video game releases are always kind of interesting, especially, like, in this year, which is already full of, like, banger video games that are coming out. But it's very easy to see, like, have a heavily... I'm downplaying it. A very heavily troubled production of Final Fantasy 15 when it used to be called Final Fantasy Versus 13, and it went through like 100 revisions and exchange of hands of producers and directors, and then we finally get the clusterfuck that is like Final Fantasy 15, like a movie, a book that ended the series because they canceled the DLC episodes, and eventually like the Royal Edition, like of all these revisions that they did.
Yeah, but I went through some shit. Having to watch a 2-hour movie to understand the opening hour of that video game, not a good choice.
No, but the fight scene at the end of that movie was kind of hype, so I was like, cool.
Oh, yeah, it was just like a huge ask for your gamer to be like, hey, before you start playing this video game,
yeah, you gotta
exit, go to Netflix, and watch a 2-hour animated movie. Now you can play the video
game. Now you can play the video game and have a little more context, and then you're like, man, and then at the beginning, you're like, oh, do I have to play as Noctis? He's so annoying. I want to play as Nyx, you know? And then at the end of the game, you're like, damn, this game's kind of... These characters are kind of great, you know? And that's a thing. Like, I've gone on record on the podcast is that I sometimes give shit to some video games because I like the characters. It's just everything about the game itself that I think kind of ruins it. Or the game, like, attempts to make a character come across as really endearing, but like I find the character unbearably annoying. It's just I find that interesting that like at the end of the day, Final Fantasy 15, for example, is flawed, and there's going to be magic cards of these characters, and the characters I think are definitely good enough on their own merit to get cards printed. It's just that the game itself is questionable, you know.
I didn't love 15's combat, but I think it's good Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, there was some fantasy. There was some crystals and magic.
Yeah,
and
there's four Warriors of Light. Like, we're checking a lot of boxes here.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, just cause it's the boy band on a road trip at the start. And then we just kind of, everything gets real crazy right after that. And that's just video games in a nutshell, you know. And I look at stuff like, is it Rumble in Thunder Junction? I think it is.
Yeah, the Western set.
The Western set, you know, like, it was funny. I think I was over on Beth's stream on Queen of Cardboard, and we were, after the game ended, and we were all waiting for the second one, we were sitting around chatting, and we were like, okay, so Magic the Gathering, right? It's not purely just, like, high fantasy all the time. They stretch out and they branch out on all these different planes that cover a bunch of different...
Well, they always have.
Yeah. And it's
the
like...
The Weatherlight Saga is like science fiction.
It's basically science fiction, right? Like, you're going around on flying vehicles, shooting lasers and all this other shit. And it's like, there's always going to be elements that are... Like, I call it, like, Magitech is a good definition for a lot of this stuff, because magic is the fuel for a lot of this. But it is still... In a way, sci-fi technology. Like, New Capenna whipped out freaking Halo guns at the Phyrexians and said, bet, let's go. And, you know, you know, they pull up. They're like, all right, get your AKs out. And everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Or get the Tommy guns out. And they're like, rattle them, boys. You know, it's like...
Light them up.
You know, shit like that. It's like, yeah, yes, in a crazy, weird world, we don't really want to be seeing these characters whip out rainbow Halo, like Halo Angel Dust-filled guns and just laying waste to the Phyrexian army. Although that is kind of just metal as fuck. But like... Going to a Western set after going to, like, a gothic horror plane and all this other shit, it just seems completely natural for us to do, and it's something that's highly anticipated for some people to be like, when are they gonna do, like, the Western theme stuff? When are we gonna get a car that says Duel at High Noon or whatever the fuck it's gonna be, you know? Like...
Oh, soon now.
Yeah, in a year's time, give or take, and, you know, we're gonna... it's going to be fun to see what they do with it. And if they flub the story, that's fine, because I'm still going to have a guy with a cowboy hat on and shooting...
Cowboy Oko?
Yeah, Cowboy Oko, you know, his son... Hey, let's talk about spoilers for a bit. If you're in the Magic story, let's talk about that a little bit. Eldraine story just came out, finished, wrapped up. Turns out, one of the characters, Kellen, the half-fairy boy who has his own adventure, turns out to be Oko's son. And it's like, what will that mean in the future? The omen pass will let us know, I guess. I don't know. But
or they'll take forever to fucking explain it like they usually do.
But, yeah, like, Oko coming back and being, you know, if Oko's going to be a cowboy causing trouble, heck yeah, that sounds great. That sounds, you know, we're going to have, you know, magic mischief with if Rakdos should definitely totally be there, and I can't wait to see that happen as well, because, like, you cannot tell me that Rakdos is not in that artwork.
Yeah, that's definitely Rakdos the demon. 100%.
And it's just, you know, that just sounds like cool fun of taking these characters in a lot of these popular settings, or the settings that we've known for decades, and then just, you know, change up the formula a bit, see what other kinds of trouble we can get up to. And that's just only within the context of Magic's lore and story, you know? Like, then we branch off into Commander games, and we're going to the post-apocalypse of America in, like, Fallout, you know? It's
that surprised me.
Yeah, that was a shock. You know, Warhammer 40K, you're like, well, that's like a tabletop game. We're going
and
to
it's fall. Like, it's has a lot of fantasy elements.
Oh, yeah.
I would say fall, like, Warhammer's got like an element of magic to it with demons and shit, and Fallout just doesn't. And the Elder Scrolls is also owned by Bethesda, which seemed like, why not that one?
Yeah, you know, hey, Todd, we always joke about Todd Howard re-releasing Skyrim. Why don't we have Skyrim the Magic set, you know? And
yeah.
You know, hey, we put Skyrim on your what the heck, your voice, I don't know.
On your Alexa?
Yeah, put it on the Alexa, you know, and they, it's a joke. Oh, wait, no, it's actually kind of real. And then now, you know, why not put it in the Magic set? That would be the next logical step of at least having the Elder Scrolls be a part of it, you know? I guess Fallout was the only option, I guess, and like I'm not complaining,
but yeah. I was just surprised.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock, but it will be interesting. And what I do find really funny about Fallout is that, like, yeah, depending on if we go to the beginning of the franchise or if Bethesda's really hardcore set on, like, their perspective of the lore, we still got, like, irradiated monsters from, like, everything you can think of, so there's still, like, a level of, like, groundedness to it, and like a bit of, like, it's science fiction stuff. It's like retro 80s or no 50s or 60s. It's just like science fiction stuff. But you know, the Brotherhood of Steel uses like a feudal system, and you know, you can make soldiers and warriors and all that stuff from there. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what comes up and how they'll make all those commander decks work out. I imagine it'll probably be pretty similar to the Warhammer stuff. Well, they'll pick a theme that wasn't really like kind of present in a color combination.
I think they'll just like faction match them.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, they got a lot to pull from, but I really do think that they, I mean, my worry is if they do kind of keep it focused on their recent,
I don't think it'll include stuff from Fallout 1 or 2. I'd be really surprised if it does.
Yeah, like,
I want it to, but I don't think it will.
Nah, I definitely think, like, Brotherhood of Steel, I mean, they love that shit, and a bunch of people do, and I'm one of them, even though they're a bunch of xenophobes.
Fascists.
You know, they love that railroad shit, that underground railroad shit that is, like, a terrible analogy for rights for artificial people, but you know what, sure, it exists. Like, if they do it based strictly off of Fallout 4, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'd think that'd be just an absolute.
I hope they do that. I think it's all of the 3D era, like Fallout 3, 4,
Yeah,
New Vegas and I guess 76.
Yeah, I mean, but that would require Bethesda to actually like really acknowledge Fallout New Vegas in some way, and that was, I mean, if they do it, great. Then, New Vegas is a great game. It's a broken, buggy fucking game, but it's a great game. But Obsidian did it.
Fucking so is most of them.
Yeah, you know, I know that lots of dedicated Fallout fans complain to the moon and back about how terrible 3 and 4 are. But like, I just find a lot of those games are really fun to just, you know, boot up, you know, mod the shit out of it, and then go around doing whatever the heck you want. And you're usually in for a good time more often than not. And I mean, like, Bethesda's got their new science fiction game coming out. Starfield.
Yeah.
You know, Starfield's coming out soon in like a month, I think, give or take. I think it's coming out at the end of the month, actually. I could be wrong. But, you know, Bethesda games, I think there's a game journalist I follow on Twitter. And he's like, more often than not, despite all the memes and all this other shit, is that like when Bethesda releases a game, they're usually more often than not, on average, you get an 8 or like a 9 out of 10 for like initial reviews, and it's gonna cause waves in some way, shape, or form, whether or not it's like a technical fucking disaster, or you have Todd go on stage being like, it just works, and it fucking like explodes. Fallout 76 came out, and you know, they basically cobbled together, like people are like, they found code in it that referenced Skyrim and Fallout 4. So like the bones and animation stuff, like why don't, like it's like a Dark Souls thing, or like Bloodborne or Elden Ring, where like they'll take resources from previous games, like animations and like skeletons and all this other stuff, and re-import it into the engine and then like reuse
it.
Why wouldn't you use like all that development time and reuse assets that may or may not have gotten used, because like why fix what isn't broken? But then they made like the giant flying mutated bat monsters in 76, but it's like a combination of like the dragons from Skyrim and like I don't know whatever else they had to reference. But the other thing, too, was that because of how many people were impacting the servers when the game first came out, and, like, it caused heavy strain, because, like, for whatever reason, the game had to keep track of everyone's inventory simultaneously instead of just one person, so just, like, they just could not technically get around it, because they're using, like, at that point, like, a decade-old engine that's held together with fucking duct tape, and then when people are like, well, let's play on the server at like 3 or 4 in the morning when no one's around, it's just the two of them, and it works more or less perfectly. You still encounter Bethesda bugs and all this other stuff, but like your frame rate's running perfectly, combat's going as intended. So it's like, you know, Bethesda's still kicking. That's the other thing too, which is really hilarious, is that,
of course, they're a huge fucking studio.
You know, they're backed up by what's it called?
ZeniMax.
Yeah, you know, like, they've had a lot of money behind it, they've been publishing a bunch of other people, other studios' games and stuff, and yes, they've resold Skyrim 100,000 times, and we could joke about that, but I own Skyrim on at least 2 or 3, consoles in my computer.
I've bought it 5 different times now.
You know?
Between consoles and computer.
You know, it's like, huh, I guess if there was a game that I wanted to boot up, it would be Skyrim, and sure enough, like, I've had it for years, and a lot of people play it, and they still play it, and make YouTube content and all the shit about it. So, you know, yeah, it would have been the better choice of Skyrim / Elder Scrolls, but now we're going to Fallout, and, yeah, I am surprised, but excited.
Yeah, same. I'm a huge fan of the series, so let's see what happens.
Who knows? Maybe there'll be more artifact creatures that get released, and you can add it into the Armix Kiskit deck. Who knows? But yeah, Magic is ultimate. I mean, I don't know. Magic is ultimately what you make of it, and you know, it's very easy to get caught up in any dumb controversy and be anti-hype train.
Internet feeds on outrage cycles anyway, so it's easy to just engage yourself in that.
Yeah.
You don't have to, though.
No. Like, I am absolutely looking forward to Eldraine now that some more cards have been previewed up at this point. I'm excited about the blue-white Hilda Ice Queen card, which I know, you know, tapping stuff down is not a fun strategy, but I think making elementals and scrying two and drawing cards and putting counters on my stuff seems pretty fun. And people are going to be able to cast adventures out of their command zone. And, I mean, who knows what else is going to be coming up with, because it's going to be...
I think we've seen most of the mythics by now.
I think so. Oh, hold on here for a second. Hey, here's another card that just came out. Something called Discerning Financier. 3 mana, 2/3, a human noble. At the beginning of your upkeep, if an opponent controls more lands than you do, create a treasure token.
Sick.
And then you can pay 2 and a white, choose another player. That player gains control of target treasure you control, so you can draw a card.
Interesting.
Interesting. So, you know, we're getting weird new cards by the day, is how it feels like nowadays. And for a lot of people, they could be pretty exhausting. But when you kind of get to sit down maybe a few months afterward, or just kind of take a look and pick and choose what you want to look at, there's a lot of cool new stuff that appeals to a lot of people. And, like, you know, the mythics look cool right now. Will and Rowan are freaking nuts. Rowan definitely a lot more so, because she could just, you know, you convert your life into X value into whatever burn spell you want. But, you know, like, Will looks pretty strong for a life gain strategy. And in white-blue, for example, like, that's pretty sweet.
Payoffs are just worse.
Yeah. So fortunately, Rowan is literally like, I'm gonna win the game. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
I'm gonna gain some life. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Probably gonna draw cards.
Oh yeah, gonna be drawing a lot of cards. A lot of X value draw cards, and just pay the minimal value possible.
Yeah, and just gain a bunch of life.
It'll be a good time, yeah. Geez, what? The announcements were so many to go over, and I've gone over them with some other people already, but it's just, yeah, you know what, I don't know, once again, I know there's a lot of shit to go over, and there's a lot of things to talk about, but I think we're just, as usual, in a good place in Magic, and I'm okay with that. I'm happy with it. I know I like every set, Fitz, you don't need to call me out again.
Yeah, that's it. I didn't think you were going to be disappointed with more Magic cards.
No. I mean, I thought it was funny the other day when I was like, yeah, this looks great. And you're like, Cole, you say that literally every time. And I'm like, I will literally keep saying it until something real bad or actually terrible comes out. And I really don't foresee that happening. Like, that would have to be. It would have to be really terrible. I mean, we're entering the point where we're finally getting Magic versions of Universes Beyond the Walking Dead cards. And I like them a lot better, obviously. But I also had, like, no relation to the original, like, media. So when the cards came out, I thought they were terrible, and I still think they are, but now I see the Magic versions on Innistrad with, like, Innistrad characters and artwork, and I'm like, yeah, this seems right, but also your point of them being on Amonkhet would have been pretty cool.
I think Amonkhet would have been a better fit.
Yeah, because, like, sure. You know, we're, like, now, because of how the story is, they're in the desert now, like, it's, you know, everything's kind of messed up, and it's their own version of the apocalypse. I could have seen Michonne, or, like, the equivalent of Michonne having walkers be there, having the zombies
there.
Their
plane also has a curse where if a person dies, they turn into a zombie, just like in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, you know what, that would have been pretty sweet. And obviously, like, going to Innistrad's, like, playing it safe.
Yeah, of course. But everyone fucking loves Halloween Town.
Hey, I love it. I'm a big fan. And, you know, who knows what they're going to be doing with that, like, quote-unquote, like, more modern horror set that's gonna be, I think, late next year.
It said the whole plane's a mansion.
Yeah, like, it's a big mansion full of, like, horror stuff, and it's gonna be pretty interesting.
But they said that's the whole plane.
Yeah.
It's like one big place.
Super interesting to see how that's gonna work out.
How's that gonna shake out?
You know, are we gonna see more Eldritch horror? Or are we gonna be seeing, like, murder dolls or murder mannequins or slasher, like, Yeah, you know, are we going to be seeing, like, I mean, who knows? Obviously, we're going to be seeing demons. If we didn't see demons, what's the point? And geez, yeah, what else? It's just, yeah, it's very interesting when it comes to, like, if they do big sets, like the Warhammer 40K stuff, or at least in this case, like, a good, decent enough chunk of cards that are unique to, like, a commander deck, they're obviously not going to be making an attempt to convert it over to the equivalent of a Magic card unless it's, like, very small sampling of it. But then, you know, when are they going to be busting out the Transformers version?
I don't think they are. I think those aren't getting in-universe versions.
Yeah, probably not. And honestly, because of, like, I think of Transformers, I'm like, yeah, obviously I want to be playing Megatron. I have not as much complaints about having, like, the old kind of, like, 80s style artwork on the card, because I just think it's, like, it's iconic enough compared to, like, depictions of actors on a Magic card.
Yeah, the actors on a Magic card one's a little weird for me, too. It's just, doesn't feel right.
Yeah, you know, like, we got the Dungeons & Dragons movie characters as cards, and, like, very obviously, you know, that's Chris Pine on there. And, like, you know, the movie was a good time, and the cards are obviously pretty fun, but, like, again, we're still having, like, characters that we know and, like, people, like, actual people's depictions on it, so it's super weird. But I look at a giant robot that can transform into, like, you know, an 18-wheeler, and I'm like...
And like, no, that's fine, that's good as it is.
Yeah, you know? And also, like, come on, we're playing Optimus Prime and Starscream and Megatron and RC, so it's like, you know, what the heck, that I can work with that. And, you know, if you want Street Fighter, you know, you got Street Fighter cards, and at least those are, like, game characters. And then also, if you want the Magic
next
versions...
Next up, we're doing Mortal Kombat ones. Where's the Mortal Kombat secret lair?
I don't know. It's, it could be pretty gruesome. Who knows if they'll be able to do it. They could probably...
I don't give a fuck.
I don't know.
They could do it.
Yeah, they can do it. I mean, heck, MK1 is coming out at some point in the near future, and there's, you know, there's hype about it, and so, like, why not? It'd be a great time, but they didn't announce it, so who knows? Maybe it just wasn't the time. Or just the deal hasn't been struck yet, who knows?
Who would Magic likes doing things slightly behind schedule anyway.
Or like, severely behind schedule. Or like, that. You know? It's just... it's always funny, like, looking back and thinking about what we're getting up to. It's like, okay, Final Fantasy. Well, I guess Final Fantasy 16 came out, so it gives them enough time to make a design for the Final Fantasy 16 characters. But we look back to, like, I'm forgetting it all of a sudden. Like, The Walking Dead was, like, behind because, like, the season, like, the other season wasn't coming out yet, and it hadn't been on air for a while, so it seems super awkward. And then they immediately jumped on Stranger Things and made Stranger Things cards. And then very quickly we got Innistrad versions of those cards. So it's like, what the heck?
Well, they've learned their mistake from the just the debacle with The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be... yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the future, and I don't know, we'll just have to, some of us will have to sit with bated breath, you know, waiting for the hype to show up, and everyone else could just groan in misery as they wait in dread, who knows.
And then buy the cards anyway.
And then buy the cards anyway, like, I don't want to buy the One Ring for this price point, but I do want one, so, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy one for this price point, but I do want one.
I desperately, you know, one or five or 10 or, you know, whatever.
I just want two.
Yeah.
Two would be enough for me, Cole.
But yeah. So Fitz, besides kicking profit and being like, hey, get those episodes out, what's the name of the podcast again?
Casual Sevens. It's available everywhere podcasts are sold.
Yeah, you know, I desperately want to get on an episode at some point, but who knows when that will happen. So I guess I'll have to go kick Profit to hurry it up.
Yeah, you should get on his ass.
I just remember when you promised me, we'll get one out this fiscal year, I think it was. And I'm like, oh, yeah?
Oh.
He's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, cool, get on it, let's go. And I guess we'll just have to, I will have to
keep on it.
I don't know. I'm hyped for a lot of people's content. You know, all the people I've invited on, especially repeat guests. But when you guys were like, oh, I'm doing a podcast too. Hey, I like listening to my friends talk about Magic too, even if it's, you know, a little bit different than what I do here. Yeah, I'll go Bug Profit.
Yeah.
Message him. Fitz, where else can people find you on the internet right now?
They can find me on twitter.com at Mr. Fitzy Fitz. You can find me pretty much anywhere at that. I stream every other Saturday at around 3 p.m. Pacific at Arena of the Ancients MTG, all one word. The content shifted to Rule Zero streams and a focus on collaborative deck brewing between myself and the three guests.
Awesome. Excellent. And yeah, Fitz, thank you for coming on once again. As usual, it's a total blast just shooting the shit with you and going on wild tangents and picking your brain and you calling me out for liking every Magic set that comes out.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Awesome. And yeah, and everyone, thank you for listening once again to another episode. We'll see you on the next one.
Bye.